Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Before we begin, a quick disclaimer. This episode discusses historical events involving people who were enslaved and contains terms that reflect the period's language, including the names of institutions. These terms are not used derogatorily, but are presented for historical accuracy and context. A time when freedom was a distant dream, when heavy chains clanked louder than prayers, and people labored under the scorching sun, yearning for a glimpse of light in their fate. But the light seemed unreachable, and dreaming of it was almost insolent and unallowable. And amidst this desolation, a silent resistance emerged. A lifeline born out of necessity and desperation. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History. Today's episode is about a network that became an essential part of the survival of the people who wanted to escape their circumstances and make a world of their own. I'm talking about the Underground Railroad. From its beginning in 1776 until the year 1865, the practice of chattel slavery, which is the legal ownership of slaves, was rampant in the United States. But it began way before that. The system began during the early years of European colonization in the Americas, dating back to 1526, and this ownership law was a thing in Britain's colonies, including the 13 colonies that later formed the United States. And according to that law, an enslaved person was considered property that could be bought, sold, or given away. But after the American Revolution, there was some improvement in the situation. The United States faced a split over the issue of slavery, with the North seeing immigrant workers replace slaves, leading to the abolitionist movement. And slowly, state by state, slavery was being outlawed, and soon every state north of Maryland had done so. But the South was deeply resistant to this. After all, their plantations were highly profitable, and the wealthy owners were not ready to sacrifice that. So as the call for nationwide abolition grew, many people butted heads on the issue. The Southerners feared that freeing slaves might give them a chance to retaliate against the whites for their treatment of them. Thomas Jefferson, who once supported abolition, explained the situation by saying it was like having a wolf by the ears. Letting go would mean your own demise. Meanwhile, in the North, things improved. but not by much, mind you. And in the South, slaves continued to work as if nothing had changed, enduring physical abuse and living in the worst conditions. Dreaming of escape felt like a faraway hope because of the dangers that lurked everywhere. Even learning or education was forbidden. So even if you could dream it, there was almost no way to achieve it. Adding to the troubles, the Fugitive Slave Acts of 1793 and 1850 tightened the reins, allowing slave owners to track down escapees, even in free states. This constant risk of being caught made it all the more difficult to attempt to escape. And it was in this atmosphere of paralyzing fear and life-threatening danger that the Underground Railroad found its space. The Underground Railroad was like a secret maze of paths and safe houses, and it was meant to provide a safe passage for enslaved African Americans. After they managed their escape, they would get help from the whites, who believed in their freedom to send them to Canada. The folks who built this network, the enslaved people who risked their lives to escape through them, and the whites who helped them escape, were all called the passengers and conductors of the Underground Railroad. Some routes led to Mexico, where slavery was already abolished, or to the Caribbean islands, which were not involved in the slave trade. There was even an earlier route that went south toward Florida when it was under Spanish rule. The aim was just to help these escapees reach a place where they would not have to live in fear of slave catchers. It's important to note that the Underground Railroad wasn't actually a railroad. So why was it called that? According to Eric Foner, it was first mentioned by that name in a Washington newspaper in 1839. They quoted a young slave who hoped to escape using a railroad that, as the story went underground all the way to Boston. So when the slave catchers lost track of fugitives as far north as Columbia, Pennsylvania, they just declared in confusion, there must be an underground railroad somewhere. And with that, it seems like the name stuck, because it captured the mysterious and hidden nature of this network. And since the name stuck, the Underground Railroad ended up borrowing rail terminology. So the people helping were agents, the guides were conductors, and hiding places became stations. And if you were the one providing shelter, you were called a station master. Similarly, escaping slaves were termed passengers or cargo, and they obtained a ticket. Those who financed the escape were called stockholders. The Big Dipper, pointing to the North Star, was the drinking gourd. And the Underground Railroad itself was often called the Freedom Train or Gospel Train. The whole thing operated mainly through meeting points, secret routes, and safe houses, all organized by abolitionist sympathizers. Participants, called conductors, also came from diverse backgrounds, including freeborn blacks, white abolitionists, and even Native Americans. The routes varied based on geography. The U.S.-Canadian border with Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and most of New York, separated from Canada by water, made transport pretty safe. So the freedom seekers traveled through the Appalachians, the Western Reserve region, and Lake Erie to reach Canada. Some other routes led through New York or New England, crossing into Canada through Niagara River or Lake Ontario. And just like the routes, traveling conditions changed. Freedom seekers sometimes used boats or actual above-ground trains, but mostly they walked or road wagons, often lying down and covering themselves up with hay. Routes were purposely indirect and often changed to confuse the people chasing the escaped slaves. Of course, escape was harder for women with young children, but some were able to escape and eventually led rescue missions themselves, becoming key figures in this covert network. And among them was a woman you might already be familiar with, Harriet Tubman. Born as Araminta Ross, Tubman had seen life as a slave from the very beginning, and endured beatings and whippings as a child. A traumatic head injury during her youth led to persistent health issues, including dizziness, pain, and hypersomnia, which caused extreme daytime sleepiness. In 1849, her life took a turn for the worse when she fell sick, which effectively lowered her worth to slave traders. Her owner, Edward Brodus, tried to sell her, but finding no buyer, Tubman began to pray for a change in his heart. Night after night, she pleaded with God, even as Brodus continued to bring people to examine her for potential sale. As Tubman prayed, Brodus persisted, and the desperation of her situation grew. Frustrated that the man wouldn't change, Tubman changed herself. Now, instead of praying for him to soften, she prayed that he would get out of the way. And to her luck, a week later, Brodus passed away. That was one problem solved, but another presented itself right away. With Brodus gone, the likelihood of Tubman being sold and separated from her family was far higher. Brodus's widow, Eliza, started working on selling the enslaved people in her estate, which threatened to separate everyone. Tubman refused to wait for her fate to be decided and took matters into her own hands. She later said, "There was one of two things I had a right to, liberty or death. If I could not have one, I would have the other." On September 17th, 1849, Tubman, along with her brothers Ben and Harry, plotted their escape. They had heard of a network called the Underground Railroad, and though they didn't know where that would end up, they knew it was better than waiting around to be separated. But on that day, her brothers started having second thoughts. The punishment for being caught escaping was worse than never seeing each other again. They convinced Tubman to return to the estate with them, and she had no choice but to comply. But that didn't last long. She was determined. This was happening, with or without her brothers. And sure enough, in November of 1849, she tried again, this time without her brothers. With this, she started her journey to freedom, utilizing the Underground Railroad. She navigated through the night, guided by the North Star, and evaded slave catchers. The specifics of her journey are not public knowledge, and Tubman never said much either to keep herself or her fellow escapees safe. But reflecting on the moment, she said, "When I found I had crossed the line, I looked at my hands to see if I was the same person. There was such a glory over everything. The sun came like gold through the trees and over the fields, and I felt like I was in heaven." After she escaped to Philadelphia in 1849, Tubman returned to Maryland to rescue the rest of her family. She ended up undertaking around 13 such missions, rescuing approximately 70 enslaved people, including her own family and friends. And this earned her the nickname Moses. Later during the Civil War, she worked for the Union Army and helped in the raid at Combahee Ferry, freeing over 700 enslaved people. After the war, she retired in Auburn, New York, and did something so many formerly enslaved people dreamed of. She purchased her own home. And through it all, Tubman remained active in the women's suffrage movement until her declining health led her to be admitted to a home. And she is just one of many conductors and station masters that changed the lives of African Americans in America. There was Jarm Logue, a former slave who had escaped to Canada when the British Empire abolished slavery. Despite the risks, he returned to the U.S., changing his name to Jermaine Wesley Logan. He studied theology at the Oneida Institute in New York, turning his life around. But he never forgot his roots and soon returned to his old community to provide shelter for approximately 1,500 runaway slaves. For the sheer number of lives he and his wife Caroline helped improve, they ended up earning the nickname the King and Queen of the Underground Railroad.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
American Criminal is a new true crime podcast from the studio behind American Scandal and American History Tellers. Every week, you'll fall deeper into the riveting stories of the country's most clever, craven, and cruel criminals. Fraud, theft, murder, and worse. Whatever the case, whoever the criminal, you don't know the whole story until now. The debut season tackles one of the most sensational cases of the 20th century, the Menendez murders. In 1989, young Lyle and Eric Menendez brutally shot their own parents. Prosecutors and the press said it was a multi-million dollar inheritance that led two greedy rich kids to murder. But the picture-perfect facade this Hollywood family built hid troubling abuse. Could these teenagers have been driven to kill? Or was it even in self-defense? Listen now. Go to AmericanCriminal.com or search for and follow American Criminal wherever you get your podcasts.
And then there was Levi Coffin. Levi was a man of many roles: a Quaker, Republican, abolitionist, farmer, businessman, and humanitarian. His impact on the Underground Railroad, particularly in Indiana and Ohio, is significant. Some even dubbed him the president of the Underground Railroad, overseeing the passage of an estimated 3,000 fugitive slaves under his care. Born near present-day Greensboro, North Carolina, Coffin's childhood exposure to slavery ignited a lifelong opposition to this institution. In 1826, his family migrated to Indiana, wanting to escape the persecution slaveholders were inflicting upon Quakers, who did not own slaves and helped them escape. In Indiana, Coffin settled near the Ohio border with other Quakers in Wayne County. He engaged in farming, became a local merchant, and eventually emerged as a business leader, making him a respectful figure in his community. This reputation allowed him to become a major investor and director of the Richmond branch of the Second State Bank of Indiana in the 1830s. But Coffin's influence extended beyond banking. He was a key member of the Underground Railroad, and his wealth and community standing allowed him to provide resources like food, clothing, and transportation for the people who managed to shatter their chains and escape. In 1847, responding to the call of friends in the anti-slavery movement, Coffin moved southward to Cincinnati, where he operated a warehouse exclusively selling free labor goods. But his reputation and his whiteness did not make his life easier. Slave hunters constantly threatened him, and many of Coffin's friends, who were scared for his safety, tried to get him to stop sheltering the runaways in his home. During the years 1847 to 1857, Coffin sheltered hundreds of runaway slaves in his Ohio home, strategically located across the river from Kentucky and not far downriver from Virginia, which were both slave states until after the American Civil War. Even in his final years, Coffin's compassion knew no bounds. He traveled around the Midwest and ventured overseas to France and Great Britain. And abroad, he formed aid societies to provide essential support like food, clothing, funds, and most importantly, education to former slaves. I have two episodes devoted to Coffin. It's episodes 74 and 75. They're called The Road to Freedom. And then there was Isaac Hopper, who operated in Philadelphia and New York City during the time. Following the American Revolutionary War, Pennsylvania became a haven for fugitive slaves, which attracted hunters who wanted to kidnap the free black children and sell them into slavery. And so Hopper found himself working tirelessly to protect the rights of African Americans and advocate for the end of slavery under the Pennsylvania Abolition Society. During that time, his efforts helped save around 3,300 slaves from a life of unending misery. But his commitment extended beyond abolitionism. He oversaw a school called the Negro School for Children, set in Philadelphia. He volunteered as a teacher in a free school for African-American adults and was one of the founders and secretary of a Society for the Employment of the Poor. So by 1841, Hopper took on new roles, becoming the treasurer and book agent for the American Anti-Slavery Society in New York. In 1845, he shifted his focus to prison reform, dedicating the rest of his life to the Prison Association of New York. Later, Hopper's daughter, Abigail Hopper Gibbons, founded the Women's Prison Association in New York, working for prison reform. She also established an asylum for female prisoners, naming it the Isaac T. Hopper Home in honor of her father. So even though he was not directly involved in the network, he did set up mechanisms to help the people who emerged from the railroad to start leading normal, regular lives. It was the contribution of people like this and many more prominent figures that helped the Underground Railroad operate. People helped in the ways they could, be it through financial resources, opening their homes to runaways, or helping them make the long journey to the border. In a way, these people were the Underground Railroad. Now, the stories of these escapees did not end when they reached the Canadian border. After successfully escaping the clutches of slavery and reaching the border of British North America, which is present-day Canada, these freedom seekers found themselves in a land of promise. First, let's look at the positive side. This place held several advantages: a long border with many points of access, far from the reach of slave catchers, and beyond the jurisdiction of the United States Fugitive Slave Acts. Ontario became a settling ground for most former slaves, with more than 30,000 individuals having escaped there via the Underground Railroad during its 20-year peak period. With this, Black Canadian communities flourished in southern Ontario, particularly in the triangular region bordered by Niagara Falls, Toronto, and Windsor. Fort Malden, located in Amherstburg, Ontario, held significance as the chief place of entry for escaped slaves seeking refuge in Canada. Even Levi Coffin supported this choice and described Fort Malden as the great landing place and the principal terminus of the Underground Railroad of the West. And so it witnessed approximately 30 people a day crossing over by steamboat after 1850. Steamboats like the Sultana played a crucial role, making frequent round trips between Great Lakes ports and aiding the conveyance of fugitives to Fort Malden. Captains like C.W. Appleby facilitated the journey, ensuring safe passage for those seeking freedom. But then there's the negative side, because struggles were not entirely out of their lives. Upon reaching their destinations, many freedom seekers continued to face problems. While they were no longer at risk from slave catchers, the racial discrimination persisted. In Canada, they had to compete for jobs with Europeans, who were migrating in masses. Later, with the outbreak of the Civil War in the U.S., many black refugees left Canada to enlist in the Union Army. Some returned to Canada later, while others remained in the U.S. A lot of the people did return to the American South after the war, mostly driven by a long desire to reconnect with family and friends. And since then, while some things have gotten better, some still have not. Some places in these areas continue to hold dangerous sentiments. While overtly, things may seem fine, the prejudices from way back then in the 1700s seem to persist in new ways. And sadly, there's no underground escape from this. Thank you for listening to this episode of Hometown History. If you could spare a moment, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave me a review. It really helps. Thank you.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.